Welcome everyone to the inaugural episode of the yet-to-be-untitled podcast. I'm Gus Katsaros, I'm with McKean's Hockey and Roto-World, and my co-host is Ryan Wagman. He is with Hockey Prospectus, he's the director of scouting there. And
also McKean's.
Sorry?
Also with McKean's, although I'm not the...
Oh, he's with McKean's too, that's correct, Correct. Yeah, so there's a bit of a cross-project going on along those lines. I kind of wanted to approach this podcast more as a blank canvas, just something where I'm able, and Ryan as well, we're able to kind of just express our thoughts in something that's a little bit more intricate than perhaps taking the time to write it out in a blog, or, you know, it's a concept that needs a little bit more articulation than something that you could put into a tweet. And we just kind of wanted to approach this in a more casual fashion, but being able to express ourselves in a bit of a different way than we've normally done in the past through blogs and tweets, et cetera, et cetera. Ryan, you can kind of take over and tell the folks what you're about.
Sure. I mean, the idea behind what Gus and I are trying to do here is to have a conversation that includes you, whoever you are listening to us, you know, things that you think about, that we think about when we're sitting at a rink, you know, somewhere in the corner or on the side watching hockey players and watching their development, and the kind of things that we, you know, that we look for, that the things that we learn as we watch the game from rinkside that we don't necessarily see from sitting at home on the couch. And the things that we see, I think, more often in the, you know, lower levels or the younger levels of hockey than we might at the NHL level. Although certainly there's a lot to learn at the NHL level too. But, you know, I think personally, I really started learning the game when I started watching at the junior and the, you know, minor professional level. So at a much more rapid and intriguing level than I did, you know, in my decades of watching the NHL game.
See, I think that from pure informational standpoint, I think I'd like to focus less on players, focus less on specifics about like prospect rankings and all that. I mean, there are other shows that cover this they probably even do so on a better. What I'd like to focus on is on the process, and like just how you said, you know, the things that may have affected the way that we now evaluate players. I mean, there are things that you've probably learned along the way that you probably didn't even think that you even that would have come up. Like, you know, alongside the rise of analytics, it's also changed the way that I think scouting has changed. The way that scouting has been progressing over the last few years. And I feel that there are still some monumental shifts on their way. So I think that discussing the process, and especially the way that we both individually view things, and some things we probably see very similarly, other things we will probably disagree on. But I want to focus on being able to explain just how we tend to find our evaluation methods.
Absolutely. You know, there are things that, you know, players will, of course, be discussed, and it'll come up frequently as part of, you know, as examples to illustrate these concepts that we're talking about. But really, we're talking just about the process. You know, it's kind of like that old saying, you give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day, and you teach him a fish, he'll eat forever. And, you know, when I go into when I'm at the arenas and I'm talking to scouts, I mean, I do my scouting myself, but I'll talk to scouts as well, and I'll solicit their feedback. But I don't solicit their feedback on, hey, what do you think about that guy? I'm really talking about them in terms of what makes them think that way about somebody. Or, you know, why they think something about somebody. Why they think player X is not going to play in the NHL one day. And why they think this guy is not a first-round draft pick. And things of that nature. You know, if I talk about one guy, that doesn't really help me that much. And a big part of that reason is because I'm just getting one person's opinion. And as we all know, I hope we all know at this point, you know, the way players are ranked, whether it's, you know, in a media publications, you know, top 100 draft prospects, or even the way the NHL teams rank them eventually when they draft them. You know, Austin Matthews was drafted first. That means they ranked him first, but not really. What that means is the team who had the first pick ranked him first. If, you know, just to use the example, there were some media outlets who had Patrick Laine ranked first in the draft last spring. And maybe if the Winnipeg Jets had the first pick, who knows? Maybe they would have drafted Laine first overall. Maybe they would have drafted Matthews. We don't really know. We know how one team drafted them. We know that when the Maple Leafs stepped up to the podium, they had Austin Matthews ranked first on their draft board. And all we know about Winnipeg was that if we take away Austin Matthews, they had Patrick Laine ranked first. But maybe he was ranked second or first. We don't really know. And, you know, while we know that Columbus had ranked Pierre-Luc Dubois no lower than third, that does not mean that they had ranked him first or second or third. We don't know. We just know where they ranked him based on who was available. And that's one guy, and there is no really right answer. You know, just like there's really no right answer in terms of who was the best hockey player of all time. Of course, most people would say Gretzky, but there is a you know, pretty substantial subset of people who say it's Gordie Howe, or people who would say it was Mario Lemieux, and it's just that his injuries kept him from having, you know, the numbers that would compare to Gretzky, or, you know, he didn't have the teammates of Gretzky, and that's why we have these discussions. If it was easy to rank players and it was, you know, inarguable, then the sport wouldn't really be that interesting.
I recall some kind of I don't remember the exact thing, but as from an anecdotal perspective, I remember Brian Burke saying how he had Morgan Rielly at number one during the draft where he picked, was it fourth or fifth, whatever it was. And I remember thinking at the time, okay, he probably did have him at number one under the assumption that the two players that he wanted ahead of him weren't going to be available. So, I mean, the way that we construct lists and the way that they're individually tailored, especially amongst teams, I think is a mysterious process in itself.
Absolutely. And there's no one right answer.
Yeah, and there isn't. There's that blend, there's that combination. And, you know, at the center, and again, kind of going back to the analytics perspective, there's so much more of an influence now that it's changing the way that we tend to do things. There's actually another way that I think that we can approach scouting, simply from the way that we actually express the skills that we're actually trying to describe, for instance. And this is very subjective because it does take a certain amount of expertise to be able to pick out the certain things. For instance, I used to remember writing out things in a scouting report like mad dash or a great burst of speed to create an offensive chance. And I thought about it. And when I'm thinking a great burst of speed to create an offensive chance, what am I actually looking at here? I'm looking at footwork. I'm looking at acceleration. I'm looking at acceleration from a non-static position. So I'm trying to break it down to a specific skill or combination of skills. So what I think, and I'm going to try to expand this in a post because I think it'd be a little bit more intricate, is instead of writing out that line, that sentence that says, you know, a dynamic burst of speed to create an offensive chance, you could kind of tick off in a checklist or of some sort, the specific skill that player may be exhibited on that particular play. You can make a note if you want, perhaps another note somewhere along the line, but I think over a long-term view, once you really do get the process down, and again, it really does take a long time to be able to get that process down, you could start identifying these individual skills. You'll be looking at your checklists every time you have a viewing for a player, and really being able to pinpoint these are the skills that he displays on a consistent basis. So I think that we can kind of change the way that scouting is somehow done simply by the way that we approach, the way that we report our findings.
So are you referring to breaking down their skills into like more subgroups, or are you talking about something different?
No, I think, eventually it would probably be a subgroup, but I mean, think of the four S's of scouting, and then you can kind of break it down to whatever you feel is in each of those four S's, and you can create your own checklist. And I'm sure that some people value certain things over others. And, you know, if there was a checklist to be created, maybe it's something I should try to do.
Well, you actually did something like that a few last season. You had this kind of a breakdown of the four S's of the different things, like what are the various, you know, sub skills or traits that a player could show. And it was a really good article on McKean's, I think he posted it, right? Which showed that. And it's something that I kind of, you know, maybe not to quite that that distinct a breakdown or a checklist, if you will, but you know, it's a sort of an approach that I consider when you know, when we did our work on Hockey Prospectus for our guidebook for you know, for our ranking system, and that we really, you know, we're breaking down a player in terms of the various components, and I, you know, we give different weights to which are the four S's, and we include physicality as kind of a fifth area. We weight them differently depending on what position a player plays, and it kind of gives us to a like an overall view of what we think a player can become in the NHL if he develops, you know, to his reasonable high end, we can say.
Yeah, there's a lot that you can actually do with that. There's more to expand with. Like, I could probably try to create a more detailed breakdown within and try to expand on this process. It's something that I've been thinking about in the way that, especially the way that we express ourselves and the language that's used among scouts. And then some of the, an example is compete. Compete is a good example. You use the word compete amongst a group of scouts, and I think that they'll interpret that in a very different fashion than they would online or through a blog or through a radio interview, which I'm very skeptical about scouts doing media, but we'll get into that in another show. That might be a bit more controversial.
I mean, I don't know what you like. When I hear compete, usually it strikes me as a lot of bullshit.
It does. It depends on who it's coming from, too.
Certainly. And I know there are players who have, you know, more, you know, quote unquote, compete than others. But really, you don't get to a point where you're a high level hockey player if you don't compete hard. You can't. It's impossible. And while there are some players who can, you know, compete harder in a vacuum than others, it's really, there's so much that we don't know about a player's compete. I mean, what does it mean to compete? You know, it's often said that like a taller player doesn't necessarily look like he's skating hard because he kind of glides on the ice. He's got long strides, and so he doesn't look like he's going that hard. Yet he's going faster than somebody who, you know, is really choppy and is kind of, you know, digging at the ice and you know, scraping his ankles on the ice and things like that. And it just looks like he's trying harder, but it's because he's smaller. That doesn't mean that the small guy competes harder than the big guy. It just is more visibly apparent. And we think we know how hard a player competes. We don't know how hard everybody's working out and what skills a guy worked on in practice or how early a guy comes in every day. We don't really know that. We hear stories once in a while that come out, but they're anecdotes. We don't hear the stories of the guys who compete super, super hard and they fail because they're just not good enough.
Yeah, from a physical exertion standpoint, I totally agree with that. To me, whenever I hear compete, I think I try to interpret it as failure to execute rather than failure to display, you know, the bursts of strength, the feats of stamina, whatever it is that, you know, makes up the word compete. So a coach will come out and say, you know, we failed to execute, or we didn't compete, or we didn't. You know, when you bring it down to a player level, I think that's when you start to get the exact definition of what you described. You know, a player's, you know, the willingness to do, I don't know, get in the corners, to look like they're actually doing something, you know. But there are actually other examples, and I'll use, you know, Steve Dangle actually brought this up, so it's a pretty good example. Nick Kuhlman was an example that kind of fits exactly what you're talking about. I felt that Kuhlman's skating just wasn't very good. Sometimes he lagged the play too. So you see that he worked a lot, and he looked like he actually did a lot of work out there. And what he really was doing was making up for the lack of foot speed by doing more and looking like he was actually contributing more. So, you know, the optics make it look good on him, but the reality was his skating wasn't good enough to be able to maintain the type of game that he was supposed to play throughout the, you know, the course of his career. So optics are a big, big factor in that regard.
That's very true. That's right. You know, you hear that a lot in baseball too, where it's like, if you look at like an outfielder, you know, there's some guys who, if they're not in the right position to start with, they have to, you know, run a long way to make a catch. Whereas other guys who are, you know, either they're just faster and they just don't look like they're, you know, hustling, or they're in a good position to begin with and they just don't need to run because the ball's coming right to them. That doesn't mean they're not hustling. That just means they're playing smarter. And often, you know, as I think you're really saying, is that a player's skill or his hockey IQ, his kind of sense of where the play is going to go, makes him look either less or more of a hustler. You know, and then I mentioned kind of, you know, Gretzky in passing earlier. He's kind of a great example of that. Gretzky, you know, and I mean, I was too young to watch his first few years, but I did see a lot of his career, and he didn't really look like he was, you know, working super hard. But he was so smart. Gretzky had, you know, probably the highest hockey IQ of all time. He didn't have to, because he knew where the play was going to go. So he would get to the area where the puck would be, not where it was now. He wasn't chasing the puck. He was going to where the puck was going to end up. And if you have that ability to read the game that well, then you don't need to, and I don't want to say exert yourself as much, but you don't need to, you know, visibly exert yourself that much in order to make a dent on the play. You're there because you have mastered the read of the game.
The greatest skill any hockey player, you know, I really don't delve too much into a lot of other sports. I love playing golf and all of that, but I don't really know too much about baseball and football and all of that. Strategically, I'm totally lost. But in hockey, the greatest skill any player can have right off the bat is smarts. If you're a smart player, smart to process, a smart, intelligent, cerebral player, you could have a very long career in the NHL simply because you just know where to be, how to react. And then the rest is just filled up with skill. And obviously, you do want to have a skilled players, but, you know, a lesser skill, but a smart player can make up for a lot of the shortcomings of a skilled player that doesn't process the game very properly. And we could get into that on a team level. You can get to that on a specific system level. You could get to that from a situational, and you could even get that down to the player individual level. You know what I mean?
I mean, I would argue a little bit that, of course, there is a limit to how much skill you need to have. Like, I would like to think that I was a smart hockey player, but I had zero skill.
Yeah, no, I got you.
I was a skater, and I couldn't shoot, and, you know, but I kind of had an idea of where the play was going, but I still couldn't get there. So it didn't help me very much. You.
I mean, that's me exactly too. But the fact remains, though, a smart player, and you want to have smart players. You want to have the smartest players in your roster. That will help. At least I think it'll go a long way to helping win games.
Absolutely, absolutely, without a doubt. You can't really have too many guys who lack, you know, basic hockey sense at a good level on a team. I mean, you can get away with having one or two. If they have some, like a super, you know, like a sniper who really, you give them really one job, you know, your job is to get to that spot and snipe. You can kind of get away with that, but we're getting away from the pure muckers in the NHL, the pure fighters who really all they had to do was be tough. And I mean, the funny thing was some of the smartest as just like, you know, pure IQ guys in the NHL in the last, you know, 20 years were the enforcers. But as far as, you know, hockey IQ, you have to be able to play the game and you have to understand how the game is being played. Otherwise, you're not going to have an effect on, you're not going to have an impact, a positive impact on your team.
You know, there's actually something along the lines of that thinking that I was, I'm going to save it. We're going to retouch this subject, but I'm going to bring it on from an element of leadership, because I think that that's one of the things that we could really expand on, what we feel leadership is. But that is going to probably take a very longer period of time than we're available for right now. But we'll get back to that point at some point in time.
Sure, certainly. That's not our first class, if you will, of this event. And that's, it's a whole other kettle of fish.
And it can kind of go in every different direction, too. I mean, you know, we might get approached with certain questions or things that others may have certain interests that they would like approached. You know, if that's the case, tweet, email, whatever the case is. And, you know, we can even try to accommodate some of the questions out there in the general public.
Absolutely. And I think we'll when this podcast is posted on the landing page, we'll include the best ways to contact us with any questions or things you'd like us to, delve into.
All right. So let's kind of bring this all down to a close with a quick preview. We're now into the 2016-17 season. We've at the point of this recording, we have seen Austin Matthews score 4 goals in a losing cause as the Leafs lose to the Ottawa Senators. There are other games going on. So maybe we can kind of go and do a quick little preview for the entire NHL. So maybe we can kind of go division by division. So, Ryan, do you want to start? Is there any particular division you want to start with?
Well, I guess, you know, usually they tend to list these things east to west. So let's start with the Atlantic.
All right. And
okay, I'll start. So I think this year, I think Tampa's the best team in that division. Just, you know, up and down the roster from the top player to the fourth line guys. They have a really skilled lineup. And, you know, assuming health, which is always, you know, the factor everywhere, I think they're going to be the top. They're going to win that division. Following them, I think it's going to be kind of a fight between, for second and third, we'll have Florida and Montreal. I don't really think it matters which order. I'm just, you know, you can just say they'll play one another in the first round of the playoffs. I see Boston coming in fourth. And it depends on, you know, Eichel hurt his ankle today. So, you know, if he's gone for a long time, you know, a high ankle sprain is kind of what I've read, and that can be, you know, that could be like 6 weeks easy. I think fifth place is, I'm going to go with Ottawa for fifth place. Sixth, I think, will be Toronto. 7, Buffalo. And 8 is Detroit. And I think, you know, there might be a lot of, you know, negative feedback on that or surprise on that. But I do have my reasons for thinking them 8th. What about you, Gus? What do you think?
I don't really think that it's that out of the question to see Detroit that low in the standings. I don't really have as detailed as a breakdown is that, but you know, I do feel that Tampa Bay is probably the class of that division. You know, Yzerman just did work over the summer. That's the bottom line. He put all the players that he needed together. They are in a very good situation to move forward. They could perhaps get a good asset if they were to trade away Ben Bishop, something to maybe bolster the blue line. Tampa Bay's the class.
I think Vasilevsky's ready now.
Well, I mean, I'll let somebody else who's better, much better at assessing goalies make that call. But regardless, even if they don't move them, I mean, they're still in a good situation. Florida, Montreal is pretty much what I tend to agree with. I think Detroit is a little bit better than what you thought. I thought that Toronto and Buffalo would probably be at the bottom of that that division, maybe Buffalo with a little bit of an edge. But with Eichel out, I think that kind of brings them closer together. And if you go into the Metropolitan.
So what about Ottawa? Where do you have Ottawa?
I think Ottawa, Detroit, and Boston are all kind of clumped in that 85 to 89 point group. So
which one, which one finishes fourth, I think, is the key thing, right?
Well,
because that's where you have maybe in the playoffs.
I don't know. I think that if the Metropolitan is actually pretty strong, it could actually limit the amount of teams coming out of the Atlantic. So
okay.
I'm not really sure that I buy that, right?
That's true. I think that there's definitely reasonable expectation that the Metropolitan Division could have 5 teams in the playoffs. I don't think it's a guarantee, but I think it will definitely be a dogfight between Boston 4th and, well, I guess, you know, Ottawa 5th, but whoever comes out 5th in the Metro. But let's move on to the Metro, sure.
So when you go to the Metro, you see Washington and Pittsburgh being the class, right? Like they're the first tier.
Yes.
After that,
not gone long, I think Pittsburgh would be number 1.
Yeah, I think that just depends on how long. It's not just Crosby. I think that Washington just, I don't know, I have a really good feeling. I think that Washington, even if they do end up with an injury, are set up in a very good spot. So I think it's still a challenge. Right after that, obviously, you have the 2 New York teams. And you know, then it starts to thin out. But Philadelphia and even Carolina, they both have the possibility of you know, fighting for that last playoff spot, which might limit the Bostons, Detroits, and Ottawas from the Atlantic.
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I'd put Pittsburgh number one, you know, and it's not a huge gap between them and Washington. I mean, I think last year everything went right for Washington.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and Pittsburgh had that horrible start. You know, Crosby was struggling, and their former coach, Mike Johnston, it just wasn't working out. And when they switched to Sullivan, it was like the lights turned on. So assuming Crosby's concussion is not a long-term concussion, and, you know, we never know. Like, I'm not a doctor, and neither are you, and even doctors don't know. Like, concussions are just tricky things. You know, and I think it's less a function of his concussion history than it is how bad was this concussion.
Yeah, I think so.
So, but I'll you know, play, I guess, optimistic on Pittsburgh and have them first, Washington second. I like the Islanders in third. And I really think, fourth will be a fight between Philadelphia and the Rangers. I give the edge to Philadelphia with Rangers coming in fifth. There's a lot with the Rangers. Like, their high end is really high, you know, and I loved what they, you know, signing Jimmy Vesey and a few of the other, Pavel Buchnevich is going to be a nice addition to them. I still don't know that they're just deep enough throughout the lineup to guarantee a playoff spot. And then I'll go, you know, Carolina, Jersey, Columbus, I guess, to round out that division.
Yeah, that's pretty much the bottom end there.
And Columbus, just quickly, I mean, I know we're not going to get into this now, but is Columbus not to you like a lesser version of Carolina?
Maybe not quite yet, but I mean, they're starting to put a little bit of a roster together, but I don't know.
Like, you know, young blue liners and not much in the way of forwards, but
yeah.
You know, really high level, but like it's just not really working that well for Carolina. Mostly lately because of Cam Ward and whatnot, but you know, I kind of seen Columbus is doing the same thing, and I don't know why they think it's going to work any different.
Well, I like Carolina, actually. That Carolina blue line is fantastic. Like, I mean,
it
those
is.
Play
it
the issue here now is are the players that Columbus is bringing into their blue line, like Zach Werenski is a legit player, but I don't know if those two blue lines are comparable in that regard.
I don't mean like the players themselves. I just kind of mean the method, like how they're going about building the organization.
Well, I tell you what, we shall see, because I feel that Carolina is going to challenge for a playoff spot and Columbus is going to be one of the bottom feeders again. So here's where we are.
I agree. Shall we go to the West?
Let's go.
All right. So Central. So I guess my home conference now, my home division now. Central is a really interesting division. I think, you know, top to bottom, it's the best division in hockey, but we're paid the big bucks to make these, you know, hot takes. So I'm going to, I think Nashville comes up on top this year. I love what they've done. Everything. They're just, you know, as long as Pecorini is better than last year, he doesn't even need to be at his best self. He just needs to be average. NHL average. I think they can be the top team in the division.
Yeah, they could absolutely challenge.
Absolutely. And I think number two would be St. Louis. You know, they're just still very strong. I go Chicago 3, Dallas 4, Winnipeg 5. And I think Winnipeg, that's five teams in the playoffs. And then Minnesota, Colorado. And I don't think Minnesota's that far out either. You know, it wouldn't shock me at all if they're, you know, even fourth. But right now I have them sixth.
It would shock me. I think Minnesota's clearly in that bottom tier with Colorado in that division. I agree with you. With Nashville has probably that potential to sweep and take that first overall. But to me, I still think the Blues are going to be the first in that division, and Nashville probably a close second. I would have given Dallas the benefit of coming in ahead of Nashville, but you know, Ben coming off hip surgery, Tyler Seguin again with an injury, and the goaltending situation. There's just too many kind of hot variables that scare me a little from picking Dallas to go.
And the blue line. Third. They're going very young in the blue line.
Yeah, that blue line is actually
a blue line like Carolina. This isn't, you know, Noah Hanifin and Jacob Slavin.
These are replacement guys.
Jamie Oleksiak and guys like that. Like, they're good, but, you know, there's too much uncertainty on that back line for me to say, okay, they're going to be fun to watch, but I don't see them, I don't see them like destroying like they did last year.
Yeah, they're going to score a lot of goals, though. There's a lot of firepower up front, you know. So, and that blue line should, we don't know, contribute a little bit to the offense. But I think that we're more or less in agreement other than the St. Louis-Nashville thing. Let's move on to the Pacific.
Okay, why don't you go ahead with the Pacific?
So I got the Sharks at the top. Mm-hmm. I bet they, with LA, probably fight it out. And I probably think that's probably the battle in this entire division. I don't think any other team in this division makes the playoffs, including Anaheim, Arizona, Calgary, Vancouver, Edmonton. Like, I don't think any of them do. Vancouver probably finishes at the bottom.
You have three in the playoffs as a guarantee.
Well, Anaheim would be that third one. That's correct. But, I mean, they shouldn't. Like, it's just...
Yeah, you know, I hear what you're saying.
Division is just... Whew. And I have such a bad feeling for Anaheim because... You know, you want to give Randy Carlyle the benefit of the doubt that perhaps, you know, something's changed, but I just don't see it. And I feel that they're still a little thin up front. So if Perry, Getzlaff, and some of that secondary scoring doesn't click, oh, man, is it going to be a hard, hard season in Anaheim.
You know, another thing that worries me about Anaheim is, you know, is John Gibson the man? You know, is he ready to be the full-time starter? And, I'm hearing more and more whispers that people are – you know, lacking faith in him as being the man, that maybe Anaheim got rid of the wrong goalie. You know, I like a lot of things that Anaheim has done, and I think that I'd still probably give him an edge for that third playoff spot. But, it wouldn't be a complete shock if they're not. And if they're not number three, then they're not in the playoffs. Who do you have coming in four?
Arizona. And it's
Arizona?
Yeah, that's
like
a large.
What they've done with like all the bringing in, you know, all of the rookies.
Well, I've made this point already, but you're right. Like all the rookies. See, there needs to be a distinction here. I feel that they created the openings to allow the rookies to step into. I don't know if the word "earn" is the right word to describe that situation. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, did Dylan Strome really have a lot of competition to win over a center spot, you know?
I mean, like Strome, I think he's ready. Like, I don't think Strome has anything.
Understood. I understand that.
I think he's fantastic.
Right. But, I mean, there wasn't very much competition. It's pretty much his job, right?
Right.
He essentially walks into that spot, and it's his job to lose rather than he has to fight to earn that spot. And I feel that probably kind of happened with a little bit like, you know, Lawson Cross is probably NHL ready too, so he can kind of step into the lineup. So it's not like they're non-NHL players, but they made the spots rather than earn the spots. So I still think that Arizona is going to struggle, and they'll struggle until they start to get some momentum using their unique approach rather than...
I'm not opposed to opening spots to young guys. I think it's a very smart way to build a hockey team if they're talented. That doesn't mean I think Chychrun will last more than 9 games, but although I like seeing him make it because it does justify the fact that we, you know, in our draft rankings had him ranked as the top defenseman and the number 4 prospect. But, you know, patting myself on the back aside, I think that, it's... I'd rather give a young guy, a talented young player, a chance than, you know, sign a retread who, you know, a guy in his late 20s, early 30s who just doesn't have – we know what he is, and what he is isn't really all that much.
We're going to go into this into a little bit more detail in another episode too, because I think that it's a very fascinating topic, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Filling in your roster and fits too, especially. So, but anyway, in that regard, how about we just end it like this? Who were the two teams in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Well, quickly, I do want to say that before I say that, I think actually Calgary can challenge Anaheim for that third spot.
Yeah,
Ryan Elliott, you know, is kind of an answer in goal. But yeah, the bottom of that division, you know, Vancouver's the worst team in the NHL. Yeah. And I don't think there's much competition this year. But anyway, so the final two teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs is your question. And to that, I mean, it's easy to say, oh, you know, San Jose and Pittsburgh again. But actually, I'm going to go Tampa and Nashville. What about you?
I think Tampa is one of those good choices. I think that's going to come out of the East, and I'm going to go with the Blues out of the West.
Okay.
So,
kind of a kiss off for Ken Hitchcock.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way to end a career, wouldn't it be? Huh? Even if he does come out as a loser, too. Who cares? Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess I hope you guys enjoyed listening to us. You know, we're at, on before we do go, though, Ryan, you wanted to maybe tell people a little bit about your hockey prospectus guidebook.
Okay, so what the Hockey Prospectus Scouting Team, which is myself and 10 other guys, spent all of last year really watching pretty much every single both drafted or signed prospect and draft eligible player, so that by the end of the year, and you know, running every player through our matrix of grading every skill, so that by the end of the year we have really a definitive ranking, going very deep for every system in the league. And we did that. We went at least 20 players deep on every system, ranking them. In some systems, we went much deeper than that if they were deeper. And really gave what I think is a definitive prospect guidebook that you can find for the NHL. You know, every organization is kind of has been audited from top to bottom. You know, we're going into much greater depth and much greater detail than I think you can find anywhere outside of an NHL, NHL organization's database. And we finally released it about a week and a half ago. It's available now on hockeyprospectus.com. It's $11.99, I think, is the price tag. But it's something that I think if you are interested in prospects, if you're listening to this podcast, I think you're interested in prospects. And if you are and you want to know more, I think this is the book for you. So yeah, it's $11.99. It's an e-book this year. And there's really nothing like it out there now or really ever. That's I guess my pitch.
Sounds good to me. I mean, I've been with McKean's for a little while. We obviously have a McKean's yearbook for sale at McKeanshockey.com, and I'm going to leave you on that.
Bye-bye, everyone.